Welcome to KXRW's Authenticity Matters, where we examine how to live more intentional, fulfilling lives by truly being ourselves. In each episode, we will talk to guests who've transformed their lives, organizations, and the community through authentic and intentional actions. I'm your host, Jen Coyne. Welcome to June 2021. This month marks the start of Authenticity Matters' third year. I'm so honored to have had the opportunity to contribute to community radio over the past 2 years and be able to express myself authentically while learning and growing as a show creator. One of the things that I've always wanted to do with this show is incorporate interesting music, songs that fit the theme or topic, but also wanted to share music that is meaningful to my guests. So I've started asking them to give me songs that are sort of their anthems, the songs that are about their journey, or otherwise inspiring to them. The trade-off, of course, has been with having less time dedicated to the fantastic stories and perspectives that my guests have. To have the ability to create the experience I'd like my listeners to have, I took the opportunity to expand the show to 1 hour, starting with this episode. It's terrific to be able to share more of the conversations that I have with my guests. And kicking off this month is an amazing and inspiring entrepreneur and branding expert, Julie Eickhoff. Julie is the founder and executive creative director for Brand Mechanic. Julie has fantastic advice for creating truly authentic brands, whether the brand is a company or an individual. Later in the show, I'm delighted to share an interstitial by radio collaborator Stephen Glickman about infrastructure needs in Indigenous communities in the Southwest. But first, in the spirit of moving to our one-hour format, let's hear a little bit of Bob Moses' Too Much Is Never Enough, and then jump into the conversation with Julie. I'm thrilled to welcome you to the
show. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So people that listen to the show know that I always ask people how they define authenticity. So I'll ask you, what does authenticity mean to you? How do you define it?
Yeah. And I obviously, as a branding nerd, I can't help but bring that in a little bit. There's a very popular phrase that branding is what people say about you when you leave the room. Mm. I think authenticity is what you think about yourself when everybody else is gone.
You feel like you match
who you are and what your brand is.
I love that. And every episode, every month, somebody has something profound and different, and that no one has ever said that before. So thank you for that. I'm really interested to hear about your background and sort of your journey to what I perceive to be a very authentic representation of yourself, but you tell me.
So when I was growing up, I was homeschooled until I got to high school. And the difference between being authentic on your own terms in your family context, where you can just kind of be your wonderful, weird self and nobody questions it, obviously came to a screeching halt when I came to high school. And suddenly I was a weird homeschooled kid and had to make sense of how I was going to navigate my personality with this new culture that I was being thrown in. And I think my first dash with where do you draw the line with your own authenticity and where do you bend, where do you flex on that a little bit? Yeah. Certainly going from what I would consider a more adult morality set, being around a lot of grown-ups growing up, and then suddenly being thrown into a high school environment where the rules are a little different, and deciding like Lord where of the you Flies stand your ground.
Or something.
Yeah,
like,
where do you stand your ground? You know, how much do you want to be the cool kid, and how much do you want to still like yourself when you're done?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you grow up in the Pacific Northwest or somewhere else?
I did not. I secretly think I should have been born here. I am one of those California transplants who found my people up here and is very grateful for Portland. But originally San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay. How did you get up here? How long have you been up here? And what drew you to this Portland, Vancouver area?
Yeah, I have to give so much credit to motorcycles. I've been a motorcyclist for about 14, 15 years now. And my first run-in with the Pacific Northwest was coming up here for women-only motorcycle rallies and campouts. Absolutely fell in love with the area. Just really loved the vibe of folks. Just felt like this is my kind of weird up here.
Yeah.
And after about 2 or 3 years of taking trips up here and just falling in love with the area, ended up moving up here in 2018, put a ring on it, bought a house. I'm here for the long haul.
Nice.
And I have not looked back.
So as an aside, I heard recently when I was doing some work actually for KXRW that they're doing a documentary about women and motorcycles in the area.
That's awesome. I know there are a few that have kind of come along, but definitely if they're getting publicity, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Women are still a very small percentage of the motorcyclist population. But if you want to talk about moments in authenticity, there's nothing like being around 1600 women who are all motorcyclists. And the least interesting about you is that you are a biker chick.
Right. Oh, that's fantastic. I love it. So you're up here now and it feels like it matches your authentic self to be here is what I hear you saying, I think.
Absolutely.
So you talk about going from homeschool to, you know, being in high school. Were there any other experiences that shaped who you really find yourself to be now?
Yeah, I think high school, you know, kind of going back to that particular example, I think high school was sort of a good lesson in where to draw that line. For example, you know, by the time I got to the later part of high school, definitely little skater kid, kind of angsty teenager. I think a lot of folks can resonate with that experience in high school and just couldn't wait to be out. And at the same time, you know, I'm a fan of a good paradox. And so I was sort of seen as this sort of punkier kid, but at the same time, straight A student. I was involved in student government. I was, you know, loved running around and helping with fundraising.
Right.
And that was my role. And I couldn't help but be struck by the hypocrisy that if I painted my face like a bulldog, which was our school mascot, and I wore my little like clippy ears and I had my spike collar, you know, no one batted an eye and it was fine. And it was no big deal. But if I wanted to be authentic and not have it in that extra context, I was seen as a threat for wearing an article of clothing like a spike collar. And to sort of have my first taste of where does authenticity sometimes, where can that be unjust depending on who you are, and where does privilege, obviously intersectionally, you know, if you're in an official role, things will slide more than they would if you're not. And just being mindful of how authenticity can sometimes have repercussions.
Totally makes sense. Yeah, I was that kind of goth kid who also was an A student, you know, and wasn't always the most popular combination, I would say.
Then you get to college and you find a bazillion people like you.
Yeah.
Like, oh gosh, I just needed a larger sample of the population.
Totally. So speaking of which, did you follow a straight line from high school to college or did you meander? What was your path?
I did. I was definitely one of those students who felt like I was kind of one of the last generations of folks to feel like if you didn't go to college right away, you were just going to die alone in a gutter or something terrible.
Right.
My brother's 6 years younger. He took a different path and he turned out just fine too.
Yeah.
So lots of ways to arrive at that. I went directly, you know, part of my kind of sneaky strategy for going to high school, especially I could have probably stayed homeschooled until then, but it's a lot easier to run on that little hamster wheel and, you know, go through the motions and be able to get accepted.
Right.
So I was able to go directly to UC Davis and that was just a wonderful fit for me.
Nice. It's an interesting thing because like I'm super just like geeking out on the homeschool to high school thing, but do you think you've always been able to be authentic? Or beyond this like high school discovery of like that balance that you played as an adult, has there been another journey to authenticity as you've been an adult?
Yeah, absolutely. There was sort of a turning point for my business where it was the last excuse that I had for not taking my business full time from its being a side hustle previously. And I had sort of the perfect storm of that country music song where I lost my health and I lost my house and I lost my apartment and I lost my job kind of all in one fell swoop. And I was like, please leave me the dog. And so my sweet little pup and I ended up, you know, at that point you're like, well, literally, what do I have to lose? And so that pup is now my co-founder and our director of HR at my agency. And there was definitely being someone who arrived at a disabled identity later in life, that was an incredible journey to what does it mean to be authentic when your sense of self gets disrupted in a really dramatic way. And sort of all the ways that I had thought of myself and what I thought my vision of success, what my worth was contingent upon, a lot of that changed when I developed fibromyalgia. And so to have my business be this kind of wonderful conduit for me to have the flexibility to kind of grow into that, to get used to being disabled and what does that mean and how do I navigate that? And then to be able to, you know, now turn around and allow others to still have access to that kind of environment that's conducive to who they are, that they can be comfortable in themselves. They don't have to be ashamed of their limitations, that we can absolutely make that work and still be very successful.
I love this so much. It touches a place for me personally as well. If you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit more about creating that accommodation, creating that different environment, because I think traditionally there's so much systemically we've created this environment and so much of what's considered corporate, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes right now.
Yeah.
Where my experience, I had a similar kind of experience a number of years ago where I was in a very demanding role and I developed some back and neck problems that prevented me from being able to do everything physically that, like, it was very physically demanding, a ton of travel, a ton of hours. And I remember, I haven't really talked much about this story. So
like, I'm honored.
I had a conversation with HR where they were kind of like, you know, you just have to come to grips with the fact that your body, basically like your body's failed you, or that your body has, you know,
is imperfect
and it's not going to support you doing this role anymore. And it was heartbreaking because I think it's that same thing maybe that you're talking about, which is like, it's a challenge to your whole identity because you have this ambition, you want to be successful in all the ways that you've dreamt about. And then you find out that your body's not, you know, functioning the way that it used to. Yeah. And then you run up against, I ran up against a brick wall where it was like, there was no accommodation to be made. In hindsight, that was kind of some BS, I think, actually.
For sure. Yeah. And I think, and I'm a late bloomer when it comes to really understanding how much ableism is prevalent in everything that we do.
Yeah.
There's from the language. And so that's like kind of a continuing thing for me to set a better example anytime I can in that regard. Cause it does, I think there's a sort of tragic aspect of, you know, it's a self-will kind of issue that if you had the willpower,
you could push through it.
Yeah. Sort of like the idea of, well, you know, don't let your disability define you. Well, that is a definition. I have many definitions, but that is one of them. And it's not really a bad or a good thing unless someone decides to make it that way.
Absolutely. There's so much food for thought there. So thank you for sharing that. And it really probably resonates with a lot of people. One other thing that Julie and I discussed in relation to views on varying abilities is how it's one of many characteristics or experiences that make up the whole person, the different aspects to our identity. The topic of intersectionalism comes up more often these days, which is progress and where the rubber really meets the road. My belief is that we all need to consider how everyone has varied experiences based on a number of factors that make us who we are. And it's important to trust that folks' experiences are valid, even when we personally may not have experienced them in the same way. With that, we're going to take a quick break and hear from our wonderful sponsors that make this community radio possible. This is Jen Coyne, and you're listening to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 and X-Ray FM 107.1.
Big thank you to Craft Cannabis, formerly known as Nuvamsterdam, for supporting our radio community. Craft Cannabis now has two locations here in Vancouver. Both locations offer online ordering and curbside pickup. The Mill Plain location has an express window that serves as a contactless option to pick up your cannabis products. The newest shop is located on Andreessen Road, off Patton Parkway, next to the Home Depot, across from Costco. Both locations are open daily, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Programming like this is made possible by the generous support of David Dansky with David's Toys, buyer and collector of old toy trains, including Lionel, Flyer, Ives, and Marks. He is interested in buying old transportation-related toys, as well as toy trains from the late 1800s to the 1960s. David offers appraisals for fellow toy train lovers as well. David's Toys can be reached at 360-576-1602. That's 360-576-1602.
Welcome back to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM. I'm Jen Coyne, and today my guest is Julie Eickhoff. Julie's the founder of Brand Mechanic, a benefit corporation for good and a values-driven branding agency. Before the break, we talked about Julie's life journey so far, including how her identity was affected by recognizing and embracing attributes like her disability. Next, we're going to discuss what holds folks back from being fully and outwardly authentic, and how Julie's navigated claiming her identity and hopes to support others in that journey as well. What do you think keeps people from being authentic? I think we've sort of like danced around it in some of the things we've talked about, but why people would be inauthentic?
Absolutely. I think a good example that's sort of recent for me is when we were going for our LGBT business enterprise certification through the NGLCC last year. I'm a bit newer to coming out as LGBTQ+. Long time ally, mm-hmm. long time listener, first time caller kind of thing. But just always felt very welcome by the community. And if anything, I owe a lot to the fact that the community was just so welcoming,
yeah.
No matter what my identity was, that it really created that space for me to consider who I was and to that point of authenticity. But in going for that certification, there was certainly a moment that gave me pause to think of not only was this sort of a form of coming out, as it were, personally, which I had already done mm-hmm. within my personal community, but publicly and also commercially, that yeah. I'm tying my business, I'm hitching my business to this wagon of my identity, mm-hmm. and to be able to, was I ready to take on the risk associated with being more visible for yeah. something that's maybe can be compromising for folks, and coming back to intersectionality, it's while I might be a queer disabled woman, I'm also a cis white person who kind of passes as not disabled, and yep. passing is such a problematic idea, and passes as straight, and those are conveniences and privileges that I I am happy to relinquish. And if it means being visible and making it safer for folks who can't take on those risks, that seems like a good trade-off for that privilege. Seems like a good way to use that and contribute and give back to folks who can't take those risks.
Absolutely. Gosh, so much to ask you about, but I really want to get into talking about branding and your business. To step back a second, so when you went to UC Davis, were you like on a path in knowing what you wanted to do was sort of branding and design and marketing? Was that like your wheelhouse to begin with?
Not a chance. I think the best advice I could give to anyone going to college is study what you actually love. Because if somebody cares about the piece of paper, they don't really care what's on the piece of paper always. And something that you absolutely love as a field of study, that's the payoff. You get to take that with you. You know, the folks can't necessarily see, but behind me, I just have a trove of linguistics books and Spanish linguistics and English linguistics. And I majored in linguistics and minored in Spanish and just big, long time word nerd, you know, grew up doing etymology homework when I was a kid. And just really dorky thing. I've had multiple jobs where someone will wave me down and be like, "Hey, walking dictionary, come here, we need a word." You know, so to think back on that, and you know, maybe I could have gotten into something that would push me towards like a quote real career. But also, like, I remember the majority of what I learned, and I love it, and I love that I can apply it, and I love that I can find creative ways to bring that into what I do, and that was deeply fulfilling for me to be able to study that. So I'm actually really glad that I didn't go with what was the most practical or what was sort of, you know, there was one time Stephen Colbert made a crack about linguistics majors, and I was like, I don't even care, he's making fun of us, he knows we exist. I'll take it, you know.
Right.
So that wasn't really kind of the thing, but I think what pulled me into that was, you know, having a very strong copywriting background. And then when I went to grad school, I went to a professional advertising copywriting program, learned a lot about design, and that sort of kind of pulled me into that industry. And then by the time I left, one of the most wonderful pieces of advice, I'm so grateful to this teacher that I had, gentleman who runs this boutique industry or this boutique agency over in Sweden. He said, he kind of took me aside after we did our little end reviews. And he said, you know, you're really good at this advertising stuff. He's like, but nothing makes you light up like when you can talk about sort of where the company came from or sort of that that start to a new idea. He was like, I know you're getting out of grad school. I know this is a big deal to do this, and it's expensive and everything. He's like, promise me if you have even the tiniest opportunity to hold out and try to get something that's more in the branding space or kind of that earlier brand development, business development kind of side. He's like, I just think you're going to be so much happier. And I'm so grateful for that advice. And that took me to where I am today.
Nice. I should preface this by saying we met through Benefit Corporation for Good.
We did.
And, you know, which I highly recommend. And Tom and Marianne have been on the show. Fantastic folks. And there's a lot of, you know, common principles that we all try to live up to, I think, through that. But definitely being purpose-driven, values-driven, being about people and the planet and a focus on those kinds of aspects. And I think with that sort of carries like that the integrity and authenticity are like incredibly important as we get evaluated, right? On and have to kind of defend sort of write our thesis about what we're all about. And so I'm really curious, what does it mean to have an authentic brand? Because I think it's very trendy to talk about creating an authentic brand. What does that mean to you?
I hate to even have to add an extra word to it because it shouldn't need it, but I feel like it needs to be an authentically authentic brand. That it can't just appear to be authentic. It has to really actually be that.
Yeah.
There's sort of like a genuineness to it. And that sort of comes back to, I think, where folks can and can't be authentic is that there is a certain amount of vulnerability that we're putting ourselves out there. But if we're able to take on those liabilities, the return on that is just so wonderful because the result is we find the people who are like us. We find the people who understand us. A lot of the stresses that folks have running their businesses, especially kind of building those initial brands, figuring out the right way to communicate, a lot of it, it's, I think a lot of what we do is sort of business therapy at that early stage. It's helping people feel good about themselves, come to terms with their own sort of their own foibles and be able to really be okay with that so that they can do their most amazing work through their businesses or their personal brands. So it's, you know, there's definitely some soul searching in that. I think it's, if somebody comes to us and like, well, we just are here to make money and we don't care about anything else. I don't actually like what I do.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the right fit. You know, it's being in business is hard. You don't do it because mm-hmm. it's easy. It, you know, if you're not thinking that you want to quit every few weeks, are you doing it right? You know, and so it's to be able to bring that sort of compassion to folks that we have been there, mm-hmm. that we understand what that's like, that we can empathize and create this sort of safe space for them to be vulnerable with us. And then we can put that together in something that they can use and be successful in life. That's just such a wonderful opportunity.
I've found the journey to being honest with myself has been a big piece of being an entrepreneur, because it's mm-hmm. like, what is my ideal customer look like? What are the attributes and what are the hard no's? You know, we've said like, where's that uh-oh feeling come in where you're just like, this isn't going to end well. You talked about, you know, we have said for us, we don't want to have clients who are racist or mm-hmm. homophobic, you know, and we'll just say no thank you to that. And that's hard though, because it's like it's turning away, you know. I remember I had an economics professor that was kind of like, you know, the only color we should care about is green, because he just was like about money, right?
Sure.
And there's some goodness about that, but like there's problematic, like I don't see color, that there's all kinds of problematic stuff with that. But it is that notion of like, I'm not going to take money from everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are some boundaries. And I think with holding up a mirror with that benefit corporation recertification every year to like say, like, am I being true to what I said I was, how I was going to behave, what we say our brand is, are we living it?
Yep.
And if you're not, either you got to change your behavior or you better change your brand, because they're not
right
in alignment.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a really important point. And I don't think I had the words for it until after this past year, with so many changes and so many kind of social upheavals, really beneficial ones. Mm-hmm. We were way overdue for a lot of these kind of epiphanies that people are only now starting to have. But I think it sort of made it concrete for me that really what makes a brand strong and have people acknowledge it that way and see it the way that it wants to be perceived, it can't just be the words, you know, and it's, you want to be clear on what your values are. You want to be clear on what you stand for. And at the same time, that brand and that experience of it is, we're always at the mercy of the people who consume that experience to sign off on it or not. And so the most effective, authentic branding is not branding that says it's authentic, that describes a lot of things. The words are very important. And also the actions to back them up are, mm-hmm. That's half the equation. That it's sort of like, anybody can have a good idea, but who can actually bring it into fruition?
Right.
So they got to be ideas that are actionable. And so that's sort of also part of our obligation when we work with folks at that level is sort of being that reality check and say, you know, is this something that we're going to strive to accomplish, or is this mm-hmm. something that we're going to commit to do? Because there is a distinction, and we want to make sure that folks, to your point, can actually live up to the standards. They shouldn't be such lofty standards that they're unattainable. That doesn't actually help anybody.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about core values versus aspirational values. And I think anytime you're building a brand, it's good to have a certain amount of aspiration built in, that you're mm-hmm. striving for something, but don't make it so out of reach that it doesn't reflect how you're living your day to day.
Exactly.
In that organization. So that's absolutely great. Tell me, I'd love to hear a little bit about the process. If somebody is, and who's your target client as far as like size and all of that, who should come talk to you if they're interested?
For sure. As we always tell folks, you should have a particular market that you speak to the most, but that certainly doesn't stop you from working with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So typically I would say that the number one alignment for all of our clients, they're all very heavily values driven. Mm-hmm. They're really passionate about what they do. They feel strongly that they owe their community something, that they want to be an active participant, not just mm-hmm. a consumer of their benefits.
Right.
For being a participant. So that's kind of the first starting point. The other thing that's nice is we're able to work with a lot of different industries, because, you know, we are very happy to say that we are not the subject matter expert in your business and your industry. That's your job. That's why you do this for a living. So, you know, our responsibility is to take our expertise in our field and basically be able to put something together that's going to feel like, if you had, if you had the luxury of our skill set, what would you, with your know-how, mm-hmm. be able to create? Mm-hmm. And so it's a much more collaborative relationship. So right. typically the folks who feel most comfortable kind of engaging at that level tend to be a little bit more established businesses. They don't necessarily mm-hmm. have to be mega corporations by any stretch, but folks who kind of have like a tested business model, they have sort of a sense of what's working and what's not.
Yeah.
They've gotten to know their brand a bit. And I say it sort of in the context, I like to think of a brand as sort of a persona or a person or sort of this hypothetical individual. And what's wonderful about that model is it allows you, they can be human, they can make mistakes. We can teach mm-hmm. it good values. We can teach you how to be a good, capable member of the society. And we can get to know our brands. And so, you know, just like any person, if their new company, if the new company brand is kind of a stranger, they may need a little time to get mm-hmm. to know it. Know what it likes, know what its preferences are. You know, is it a suit kind of brand? Is it a shorts kind of brand? You know, how yeah. does it talk to people? And, you know, so a lot of times at that stage, we may even be helping somebody with a rebrand or kind of refocusing now that they really have a good sense of it.
Right.
At the same time, I have such a soft spot for the little folks, and you know, we're big on the underdogs. So, you know, I love being able to have a strategy session and just help somebody feel a little bit more capable that they've got a little sense of where to go and, you know, have some best practices and, right. you know, and we always do free initial consults too, because I love getting to meet folks in the community and
yeah.
I can give them good info. Fabulous. You know, whether we work together or not, that's great. I just want to know that folks are at least using their time wisely.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that aspect of it. It's just reaching out and you never know when you make that connection where it's going to play out down mm-hmm. the line for sure.
Yeah.
You're listening to Authenticity Matters on KXRW and X-Ray FM. My guest Julie Eickhoff gave me an excellent playlist for this month's show. Let's listen a little more to one of the songs, Pick Up the Phone by Dragonette.
Tell me a little bit about how folks can engage with you or reach you. Like, what's the first step? Is it that consultation or?
Yeah, that's always a great place to start. At the same time, you know, I know a lot of folks want to kind of poke around and see what we're mm-hmm. about. So I would say our website, which is brandmechanic.com, that's always a great place to start. You know, full transparency. We just went through a rebrand ourselves. Mm-hmm. We've been growing over the last couple of years. And so I have regained a new deep empathy for what our clients go through. So it's, you know, and I think one of the wonderful things about sort of being the producers of the work, but also kind of the consumers in our own right, besides keeping us very humble about what yeah. that feels like and how mm-hmm. difficult that can be. I think it also makes us able to, help people see where they don't need to be so perfect. That branding is not about perfection. A lot of it is about pragmatism, kind of mm-hmm. what works for you now, what is going to be kind to you, not what did somebody recommend because, oh, they said that's what you're supposed to be doing. Well, if it's not the right thing for you, you know, let's find the right thing that is.
Yeah.
And yeah. It can be such a better experience for folks in business.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to feel genuine. I remember when we started our company 5 years ago, it was like all about the funnel. Like, how do you create this funnel? And we like dabbled in it and thought about it. And we were just like, this doesn't Not that we don't have elements in that and what we try to do, but just that whole concept and like trying to replicate that, it didn't feel genuine to us. And we were just like, no, that's not the path we're going to take, you know? So
yeah,
comes back down to like, what's the behavior and is it going to match?
Yeah.
You know, how you define yourselves, your brand, your values, all of that. So.
And as I say, way too often, you know, it's advertising, not art. And that is no dig against art. Art is wonderful. It's open-ended. It can serve its own purposes and its own needs. It doesn't have to be beholden to anybody. The difference is that if you're running a business, that's advertising. It's not art. It can be, you know, the most beautiful thing if it's not practical or pragmatic or not providing return or not speaking to the right audience. You know, ultimately, art can live for its own sake, but our companies and our brands need to honor their audiences, and they need to be aware of what their audience's needs are. And so one of the wonderful things about sort of transforming that model from kind of an inward stressed kind of competitive vibe that oh my gosh, like we have so much to prove and we have to show that we're worthy. Right. And, you know, and obviously a lot of that ties into kind of the personal side of running a business too, that those sort of anxieties can kind of, you know, nurture each other along in a not so great way. and to flip it around and be like, it's not about the company. It's about the people who buy the products, that engage with the website, that experience that brand. That's the experience we need to focus on. And when we kind of look outward from that, it allows space for that authenticity. It allows space for that audience to feel really seen. And everybody just feels better about that interaction, that it's not about selling to somebody. It's about finding that commonality that feels really good and really harmonious.
It's about solving people's problems.
Yep.
Right. I mean, it was funny because I was going to come back to when we were talking about college, and it's like, I don't know that it totally matters what you study. That experience for me, it's all about becoming a problem solver and being an innovator and a creative, like how to do that. And then you can apply that to anything. And I think that when it comes to running your own business, if you genuinely are interested in solving other people's problems, identifying opportunities for them, those two things, you know, it's the pain relievers and the, you know, the game creators, those two kinds of things. When you get into that space, then you really have something that somebody wants. And it, when people talk about like the used car salesman kind of like negative stereotype, it's always because they feel it's like when you feel like you're being pushed on or like sold to too much, that it feels yucky. When it's someone's genuinely coming to you and saying, I have something on offer that might solve a problem you have, take my money.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I always tell folks, you know, ultimately, you know, to your point, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. You are in the business of eliminating decision fatigue, and how well you eliminate that decision fatigue is how well your business does. A lot of the conflict that folks might encounter with their clients and customers often has to do with like a mismatch in expectations for how much you're going to solve that decision fatigue for them, how much they're going to have to choose, and how much you're going to kind of take that off their plate. And I think the more you can set those expectations clearly and help them understand where you can and can't do that for them, I think that's when those engagements get really wonderful. And you know, as you were saying, the customer feels really seen. That in those sort of like high pressure sales things, I mean, people are even called targets, or, you know, they're sort of like a sad dehumanization. That I understand that folks need to be profitable and they need to get new business. That's a reality. But to turn everybody sort of into, I call the Kleenex model, where you just keep taking them out of the box and you just hope the box doesn't run out, you know, eventually it runs out. And, you know, if we actually see people as whole people, if we treat them that way, if we see their needs and we actually speak to them personally, it also makes it a lot nicer, because then you don't have to do so much hard sales. People just refer you because they had a good experience and you took care of them.
Yeah. If y'all could see how much I'm nodding when she's talking, I'm just like, yes, yes, yes. Totally on point. So people have a lot of choice and do have a lot of fatigue with, I mean, there's just so much information, so many things to consume out there. I'll ask you one last question, which is, if there was a book or a blog or a movie or a TV show that you would either recommend or that you found really inspirational on your journey toward authenticity, what would it be?
First one that comes to mind, one of my absolute favorites is, I'm not a spokesperson. I just am in love with this series. Season one of Abstract on Netflix is one of my absolute favorites. It's definitely like a nerdy creative thing.
Yeah.
I think it'll help folks who maybe are less familiar with the more kind of creative services industry, have a little perspective into what, why we're so excited about it.
Yeah.
But it goes through just there are a bunch of people that I would describe as folks that everybody knows but doesn't recognize.
Yeah.
Like that they know the work, they see the impacts of it. There's these incredible architects who are changing the way that we think of the integration of people and buildings and functionality and landscaping, and really saying, do we have to do it the same way we've always done it?
Right.
You've got folks like Ez Devlin, who's this just brilliant lighting designer and stage designer. And to think through her creative process is beautiful. There's an episode with Paula Scherer, who's just this amazing graphic designer. She's done, you know, LP covers back in the day. Mm-hmm. She did the Citibank logo. Like there's a lot of things that you've seen her work everywhere, but you don't know it's her. And, I love the insights that they have. And it reminds me how good it feels to be doing that kind of work and make a difference for somebody. And ultimately, to do something we've always done in a way that's better and better serving of others.
Totally. I mean, we as individuals, as a society, take for granted design and architecture in the largest sense of the definition, because everything around us has been designed.
Yep. You know? Somebody thought about it.
I mean, unless even when you go out in the wild, like if unless they have never cut down those trees, like everything is designed. And so thoughtful design is very important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially when you get into packaging and things that you touch. And I have permanently, ruined my partner for packaging because that's something we work on. So I'll be talking about it and he'll just notice those little nuances.
Yeah.
Oh, I really like how that feels, or like, wow, this unboxing is a really nice experience. That was really easy.
Right.
And having more appreciation for how somebody took so much time to think about what it would be like for you to take the tape off a package. It's really amazing how much thought goes into good design and how much we don't notice it when it's good.
Absolutely. We really do take it for granted. Well, it's been an absolute thrill to have you, Julie Eickhoff, on Authenticity Matters. And once again, it's brandmechanic.com, right?
That's correct. Yep.
All right. And if you're interested, check out their website. And I'm going to show a picture of her in her mechanic shirt that goes along with it. She is on point. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
I've been talking today to Julie Eickhoff, founder and executive creative director of Brand Mechanic. We talked about creating an authentic brand for yourself and for your organization. This programming and community radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Without them and without contributions from community members, we wouldn't be here. Let's hear from those sponsors, as well as hear about community-based organizations providing valuable services to those that need them. This is Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM and X-Ray 107.1 FM.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at ADCO Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at ADCO1.com. That's ADCO, the number 1.com.
Court-appointed special advocates for children, known as CASA, are volunteers who advocate for the best interest of children who have come into the care of the state as a result of abuse, neglect, or abandonment. You can lend your voice and volunteer with CASA to change a child's story. CASA offers virtual info sessions and training. If interested, now is the time to get involved with CASA and make a lasting difference in the lives of children and families in the foster care system. Clark County CASA is a program of the YWCA of Clark County. More information available at casaclarkcounty.org.
Welcome back to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM. I'm your host, Jen Coyne. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is our first hour-long format, and I'm excited to bring in some additional and different type of content that aligns with the authenticity theme. Stephen Glickman, a recording assistant for Authenticity Matters, has started doing his own radio pieces featuring Indigenous people and giving voices to issues that affect them. Authenticity Matters is about people's authentic journeys and exploring the different challenges and successes that my guests have had. I thought that Stephen's pieces complemented this show and my desire to expose my listeners to viewpoints they may not have heard before. Stephen, tell us a little bit more about what inspired you to do these interviews.
With the murder of George Floyd and the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement, all of a sudden there was a lot of talk about social justice and privilege, and it affected me very deeply. And with all the talk about BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color, it started to occur to me that I wasn't hearing a lot about Indigenous people, and I wanted to learn more, and I wanted those people to be given more of a voice. So I decided that I was going to start talking to Indigenous people and finding out what matters to them.
So tell us a little bit more about this interview we're about to hear.
This interview with Dr. Suzanne Singer shines a light on the deficit in infrastructure for Navajo and Hopi people in Arizona. Hopefully, it will remind people that we all face challenges that others are unaware of. We all need courage to overcome our difficulties, and we often need help to become our best authentic selves. Just like with any radio listener, the Indigenous voices, that's all news to me, and that's, I think, the best kind of radio. I want to give voices to people that you don't normally hear, because that's what expands your perspective and expands your world.
What's next for you on this endeavor to amplify diverse voices?
Well, this is an exploratory journey. I have started to just poke around like, hey, where are Indigenous people and who can I talk to? And like I found out that the largest Native American population in the United States east of the Mississippi is in North Carolina. I had no idea. So I've started to look up resources of people I can talk to there. And then in the Portland metropolitan area, there are tribes and they're there to talk to and listen to. So I'm going to reach out.
Well, great. Let's listen to your latest interview.
I'm Stephen Glickman for KXRW Vancouver and X-Ray FM Portland. And today I'm talking to Dr. Suzanne Singer. Dr. Singer is a Navajo tribal member who grew up in Arizona, earned a PhD in mechanical engineering from UC Berkeley, and is the co-founder and executive director of Native Renewables. In 2019, she won the U.S. Clean Energy Education and Empowerment Entrepreneurship Award for outstanding leadership and accomplishments in clean energy. Suzanne, can you tell us more about yourself and what you do?
So I am Suzanne Singer. I am the executive director of Native Renewables. We are a nonprofit organization based in Arizona, and we are addressing energy access issues within the Navajo and Hopi nations. We wanted to provide power for 15,000 plus families who don't have electricity.
So what is the means of power generation that you're using?
We're working with off-grid solar and focusing only on residential solar systems. So we want to be able to provide power that can be used for refrigeration and powering lights and also charging cell phone devices and some small electronics.
And you're primarily replacing coal.
Yeah, so Navajo and Hopi are both historically coal economies. There's a few within the area on different surrounding different areas of the nation. And recently, one of the power plants was decommissioned at the end of last year, end of 2020. So with that occurs all the jobs from the power plant operations, from the coal mine operations. So some of the really good paying jobs that existed in the area no longer exist. Some of the royalties that came from those energy efforts that used to go into tribes and into the different programs, so those no longer exist. And so there's millions of dollars, hundreds of jobs that are gone that now I think we're trying to be part of the solution and find new new skill sets for people who want to transition to renewable energy. And there's a huge economic gap to fill for sure. I would say our main focus and what I'm passionate about is just having the human right of electricity, of energy access. Some families have been waiting over 10 plus years because they think they're going to get connected to the electrical grid. And a lot of those challenges have to do with money and how expensive it is to connect to the utility grid. But I think just providing that source of power will allow families to have food, refrigerator, not have to get ice every day just to keep their food cold. I know there's businesses that exist in communities that they just need something to power Wi-Fi devices or satellite devices so they can have internet access. And of course, for students who need to power up some of their tablets or their electronic devices, it fulfills that need as well.
By providing power, you're addressing a whole bunch of gaps between indigenous populations in the Southwest of the United States and the surrounding primarily white communities.
Yeah, the other thing I forgot to mention is, so the history of both these tribes is exporting power to the southwestern United States, to major metropolitan areas. And while that was happening, there was not so much power being provided to the community members within these nations. So the Navajo Nation is about 27,000 square miles in area. There's 15,000 families without power. 1 in 3 families don't have access to clean water. There's a huge digital divide, so lack of internet access. And I think there's roughly 13 grocery stores in that area, so it's also a food desert.
These sound like common BIPOC issues.
Yeah, exactly. Thinking about energy justice, and that all gets tied into environmental justice. People like to use climate now. And so part of it is finding new ways to do energy projects. We're big advocates of training people and providing the skill sets or the technical knowledge to go out and have a career. But also, I think we're also mindful of some of the large energy developments that have happened in these communities that have negatively impacted the lands or the water sources families or communities relied on for many years.
Does this help restore the practice of tribal values?
I think it definitely supports it. Our former director, Wahela Johns, liked to talk about our stories as Native people and how we utilize the sun and how critical it is to us. And she likes to correlate that to being able to use sun to literally provide power in your home. You know, some families don't want electricity. They like how they used to live and the off-grid lifestyle. And, you know, we don't by any means don't want to push technology on people. But I think there are families as well that struggle with the technological changes.
I wish we had more time, but thank you, Suzanne, for joining me today and for your insights. This has been Stephen Glickman for KXRW Vancouver and X-Ray FM Portland.
The Thanks again to Stephen Glickman for the work he's doing to elevate voices in our community and bringing issues to a wider audience. Do you have thoughts for other topics, issues, or voices you'd like us to showcase? Contact us with your ideas on our Authenticity Matters Facebook page or through our show page on kxrw.fm. Before we wrap this month's show, let's hear from our sponsors. I'm Jen Coyne, and you're listening to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM.
Domestic violence is not okay, and it's on the rise, especially now during this time of COVID-19. Domestic violence comes in many forms, such as physical abuse, verbal, financial, sexual, stalking, and technological abuses. If you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship, we can help. The Vancouver Police Department and the YWCA are here for you. You are not alone, even in this time of crisis. You can call the YWCA at 360-695-0501 or call 911 for the police. You can also find helpful information about the Safe Choice Domestic Violence Program at ywcaclarkcounty.org and in Portland at ywcapdx.org.
Riverside Performing Arts is releasing Metamorphosis, performed by 6 to 18-year-olds. Sponsored by Northwest Performing Arts Alliance, Metamorphosis is a unique 11-act, 45-minute production with an emphasis on dance. Metamorphosis is available via streaming May 29th through July 10th at www.northwestpaa.org. Tickets are $20. Proceeds support sponsorships, outreach, and future performances.
Thanks for joining me this month on Authenticity Matters. This show is a passion project for me, and my hope is everyone has the opportunity to live with intention and find a path that feels authentic and true to them. I hope this show provides a little bit of inspiration for your journey. Join me next time to hear more authenticity journeys on Authenticity Matters. This is KXRW 99.9 FM.